Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode of the Runner's World podcast is powered by New Balance Fuel Cell. If you're aiming for a faster half marathon, 10K, 5K or less, then good news, the New Balance Fuel Cell shoes could be for you. Crafted for speed, the new and improved Fuel Cell technology has a high rebound sole and increased responsiveness so that you can run that personal best whatever your level. For speed built faster, check out the New Balance Fuel Cell now at newbalance.co.uk. Hello and welcome to episode 33 of the Runner's World podcast, the weekly podcast bringing you all the latest running news, views and interviews. I'm Rick Pearson, the Runner's World section editor. I'm here with Ben Hobson, the digital editor. Ben, tell us what we've got coming up on this week's show.
This week we are unlocking the doors of perception and discussing running hallucinations. These are a phenomenon experienced mainly by ultra runners as a result of deep sleep deprivation. We have ultra runner Susie Chan and James Poole coming in to describe their own running hallucinations, along with some of the funniest ones they've heard of. Have you ever had any, Rick?
I haven't. I did the North Downs Way 100, and I feel like I was on the verge of having a running hallucination. But I had my best mate pacing me, running alongside me, and I think having something to chat to was probably a bit of a lifesaver, because I know a lot of people see some pretty remarkable, weird, scary things.
Yeah, definitely. I've had a few riding the long way on the bike through the night.
Wow, right.
Not super bad, because it's like, you know, but just like flickers of like, whoa, what's that?
What's that?
Yeah.
Oh, it's nothing.
Oh, it's nothing. It's fine. You're not losing your mind. It's an interesting one, isn't it?
It's
a very interesting one. Actually, we would be delighted to hear from our listeners if anyone's experienced any mid-run hallucinations. What were they like? Was it a pleasant thing? Did you see something lovely, or were you scared witless? Please email us, podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
Guest of the week, here in the studio, guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
So our guests this week are ultra runners Susie Chan and James Poole. Having completed numerous ultras between them, including the Western States and the Spartathlon, Susie and James are no strangers to the running hallucination. We're delighted to be joined by them in the studio now. Susie and James, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Let's start with you, Susie.
Okay.
What's been your experience of hallucinations? Tell us about it.
Well, the thing is, when you sign up for sort of 100 miles, that sort of thing, people start talking about hallucinations. And unless you are having one, you don't quite think it's going to happen. So my very first hallucination was in my very first 100 mile. It was the middle of the night. I probably hadn't fueled properly by that point, and I was trying to stay awake. And all I can remember thinking was about, if I fall over, I'm never going to be able to get up again. And then all of the roots of the trees turned into snakes. So I was like, I was kind of like, you know, doing this kind of comedy overstepping over all the tree roots. And then more recently, in another 100 miler, I was quite tired, probably hadn't eaten enough. And it was a very vast open space, and I saw picnic tables with lots of red wine on them.
Oh, that's a nice one.
That was a nice one. Was a nice one. And then I was running with my husband at the time, and I said, oh, I'm starting to see things. He went, oh yeah, the trees have had faces for miles. I think we need a coffee.
Well, James, tell us your experience of hallucinations.
Yeah, I think it's the same. It's becoming a bit of like a regular occurrence now. You almost sign up for an ultra, know you're going to get a bonus of having some hallucinations at the same time. And yeah, they've gone back for many, many years. Probably the most recent and most crazy ones was when I did the Gobi 400K And it took me like an hour and a quarter to do 2 kilometres because I was climbing over boats and pontoons and jetties on this frozen lake. And I was absolutely petrified I was going to fall in the lake and die. Because, you know, you obviously you read all these things about how people fall in frozen lakes, you know, you can't get out. Yeah. So I was petrified, eventually got to the checkpoint with really bad hypothermia. And, you know, and they made me sleep for 7 or 8 hours in this thing without letting me go out. And when I got up the next morning, I looked around and I was like 3,000 metres on Tibetan plateau. And there'd never been a lake there in a million years. I mean, there was no water. It was a desert. But I was petrified that I had this. And it had been planted because they talked about this reed bed somewhere in the briefing. And somehow or other in the tiredness, right. I'd like focused on this idea. There was a reed bed and it would, you know, I was really scared. But I would love to have seen someone to have filmed me climbing over these invisible boats and things. Crazy.
So, I mean, that is genuinely quite scary, though. I mean, because we laugh about, like, oh, it's funny seeing faces. Or does it switch between this is, I know I'm hallucinating, or actually I know that this is bad? Like, is there... Do you still have a sense of consciousness, like, in terms of...
Well, my experience, I mean, I've heard some quite harrowing stories, actually. So people have some quite... I mean, maybe it's quite telling of what your mind is. But some people I know have had some really quite distressing hallucinations. But for me, I don't know about James, but for me, I was actually aware that it wasn't there. And it was like being awake in a dream, if that makes sense. So you know you're seeing it and it looks perfectly... real, yeah. But you know it's sort of not there. But yours sounds like you believe it was there. So,
oh yeah, that's probably the worst. Yeah. But I agree, they sort of fall into two categories. For me, anyway, in two categories, if you can categorise hallucinations.
We are. We have now.
We're about to. The first one is those things that you just see. Like I always see. It's funny you mentioned your husband seeing. Like faces and things. I often see like little imps and gnomes and things, and it's the light, especially when you have a head torch at night, sort of reflecting off of bushes and trees, and so they sort of create these sort of faces and things there, and you sort of, you know, that these aren't really the imps and gnomes and stuff and goblins. They're not really real, right? So you could just carry on, and you're like, oh yeah, another one, and you just carry on. But then, yeah, I think it was because of the extreme. I hadn't slept in, you know, 3 days or something. It was the extreme level of tiredness where you literally start to hallucinate things in a different way, and I haven't had a lot of that. It's more been in the former category than the latter.
Have you ever hallucinated in the day? Because I was asking people about this, and mine have only ever been at night when I've been tired. And I think you're right. It's sort of the trick of the light. But
oh no, in Gobi, I was fortunate to run with a friend and an awesome photographer, James Carnegie, and he did 40k with me in the Gobi Desert, and I was pointing at these rocks and things. And I was like, that looks a lot like, you know, a train. Can you see all the carriages? And he was just looking at me going, what are you talking about?
What's happening, James?
Yeah, and he's actually got some video of me just talking absolute garbage to him in the desert. So
you're not sure it wasn't like one of those occasions you're lying on a hill somewhere looking at the clouds and you're imagining what they might look like?
No,
sure, you were just doing that.
It's there.
It's a little bit like that, though. It's exactly that sort of thing where your brain and your eyes sort of play tricks on you about things. I knew it wasn't obviously a train, but I was like, those rocks have sort of formed into a high speed train.
I should get on.
would have been a good idea.
Running.
Yeah.
Do you think that you both have become better at handling hallucinations? It's something you maybe expect now and you can kind of deal with it better.
I mean, I know that's when I need to eat something or have some caffeine, basically. Yeah. I was actually, do you know what? I actually hallucinated crewing once. I mean, it was a hell of a race. It was two nights of no sleep.
Okay.
And I was in Death Valley, and I was driving the car, and I was like, I need to stop. For me, it's always like, okay, I need to drink, I need caffeine, I need to eat some food, and I need to kind of, you know, kind of just sort myself out. It's normally, for me, it's definitely a combination of tiredness and not enough fuel.
Okay.
So for me, that works and that gets rid of it.
So there's nothing actually specific about running to this. Presumably, if you were cycling for 2 days, marching for 2 days, actually, it's a kind of sleep deprivation thing rather than running.
I think so. For that particular one in the car when I was crewing, I mean, I had run, I think, about 40 miles because I was running and then we were sort of taking it in turns. So I think I'd run about 40 miles and not slept for 2 days. And I'd been behind the wheel of a car for about another 9 hours. You know, the combination of all of those things. Yeah. So I think it is a lack of sleep.
Yeah.
Maybe it's also the landscape. So runs would tend to be across, as you say, like there's going to be objects which will manifest into sort of different things. If you're running through the woods, obviously all the trees and everything will they're odd shapes that can kind of allow the mind to be.
I wonder
a bit
if
more...
anybody hallucinated on a treadmill. There you go. That would answer that
or
question.
Like 24-hour race.
Yeah.
You didn't have anything.
No, not in the 24-hour actually. No, that's very interesting. I didn't.
I think it's to do with mental stimulus, though, as well. So if you think about a 24-hour race, you run around a track, you see someone every 400 metres, sort of 2 minutes or whatever.
That's true.
But I think if the more you do these ultras, particularly when they go super long, you end up spending a lot of, you've got to be comfortable with your own company because you spend a lot of time. You don't see people for 12, 14 hours. You spend a lot of time with yourself. And I think that can be sort of good and bad in as much as if you have things on your mind. And I have actively made some decisions before doing some long races where I left a job because I wasn't happy in it because I thought if I go to the desert and spend all this time on my own, I'm going to be like, that's not going to be good for me. So sometimes removing some stresses, because otherwise you spend the whole time like procrastinating on about something that you now are in the middle of nowhere and can't do anything about. But I don't think it's very healthy for your ability to get to the end or perhaps for your mental well-being during that thing. And I think it's about that, as much as the tiredness exacerbates the fact that you're on your own.
Yes.
And then then your brain goes haywire trying to add some sort of stimulus to what you're doing.
Yeah. Mm. What stage in a race I presume it's different for different people, but we're talking long distance here, aren't we? We're talking kind of 70, 80 miles. It isn't something that kicks in.
I'm not
like
sure parkrun is famed for like people are.
Well, you try it. Don't sleep for like 3 or 4 days.
And then do parkrun,
and then see if you get hallucinations. Yeah.
But with you, Susie, let's go back to the snakes.
Oh, yeah.
How far into a race was that? Like?
That was probably, it is definitely over 70, 75 miles, I'd say. Right. And then the other one, actually, it was about the same. You're sort of in that's the sort of the witching hour of a 100-miler, isn't it? Because you've still got quite a long way to go.
Yeah, right.
But you've run a long way. So, yeah, 75
and,
miles.
And at night on both occasions?
But only ever at night. Yeah. I never hallucinated in the day. I think that's probably a good thing. I think
that's more understandable at night, I think. What about you, James?
Yeah. I mean, I think I haven't had too many at 100 miles. I had the last time I had them was at North Downs Way. Congratulations,
North Downs Way 100.
Thank you very much. I mean, I've hardly mentioned it at all in podcasts, but I did run 100 miles recently.
See anything weird?
I was really, really worried actually about seeing hallucinations. I don't think I've got great tolerance for that kind of like seeing stuff, and that really freaked me out actually. So I was very aware of the possibility that could happen. And I think I saw minor things like a light in a window I thought was maybe like someone camping or something.
See, when you say it out loud, it does sound...
Yeah, but it's not... I didn't see, an imaginary lawnmower that I had to run through or something, which is one that you mentioned in the article. So no, I didn't, but I was... I didn't want to DNF through hallucination.
Oh, no, I don't think anybody's DNF through hallucinating. I don't know. I mean, it's not really. So I was asking people about hallucinating, and I think everybody in had a sort of unified voice in that it wasn't. It's just part of it, and it's not something that they would stop a race for, or you're aware that it's happening, so it wouldn't. Not frightening in that.
It's not distressing in that way.
But you.
I was close to DNF.
Were you suffering hypothermia before, or was it?
It exacerbated a problem, and I think the challenge with hallucination is that if you get to a point where you make poor decisions,
and that's
what it affects your decision making function, and it affected my decision making function because I should have just gone in a straight line. Instead, I'd snaked all over the place. Yeah, and
should I give all my gels to this imp?
And so I meant I was out in minus 15 for like an hour longer than I should have been, and so by the time I was moving so bloody slowly that I then ended up being hypothermic. They were talking about evacuating me from the course.
Yeah. Okay.
Because so I think it's one of those factors that potentially can cause you a lot of problems. And I mean, I guess I've had races where I've literally not hallucinated, but got so tired I've just laid down and it's becoming a bit of a thing. I have to be careful that sleeping on race courses is now. I mean, when I did Spartathlon, Chris Mills, who was out there crewing, who many of the listeners will probably know. He was like, didn't you just run past me a while ago? And I'd be like, oh yeah, I just had like another 20 minute sleep at some rest point. And because I think that, that trying to override the fact that when you're really tired, you make poor decisions. And that for me is what my sort of limiter is, that if I get super tired, I then make poor decisions. Right. So if I can sleep and get 15 minutes, then maybe my decision making is better and I get to the end quicker.
So sleeping, you think, did it sort of starve off the hallucinations?
A little. Well, after in Gobi, once I had 7 hours sleep, I had no hallucinations and didn't sleep then till the end. Yeah. Right. So, but once I'd had that, and so if I did it again, I think I would have a different strategy, which was instead of going as long as you can before you sleep and getting into this horrible state, try and sleep. Yeah. In fact, the women's winner, she slept for like 15 minutes every like 4 hours. Wow. And just sort of...
Topped it up
and didn't seem to have... And when she finished, she looked like... You know, looked amazing, and I looked like I was.
I've seen the pictures. Yeah. I've seen the pictures of
I look
you.
Like a hobo.
Yeah, fair play. Yeah. Obviously, you're both very much in the ultra world. You must have heard of other hallucinations. Susie, let's start with you. Any favourites that you've heard from people?
Well, I have actually. So this was one of the first stories I heard, which kind of piqued my interest, just purely because it made me laugh. Actually, it's a friend of mine called Debbie Consani, a fantastic ultra runner, and she ran a race called Grand Union Canal, which is from Birmingham to London, 145 miles along the canal, so relatively flat. And she, towards the end of the race, she thought that there was a lady in a red cloak following her, and kept turning around and being like, she's still there, she's still behind me as she was running along. And then after a few miles, she turned around and had a proper like, now why are you following me? And it was actually one of those dog poo bins which was just sort of following her all the way. I know, it's amazing.
And frankly a little bit disappointing as well.
To be someone really a haunted canal sounds much better.
Exactly. Just a dog poo bin.
But you guys You pace a lot of people as well at these things. So you kind of like you find the people and probably at their lowest or when they're at their most stretched. So you must have paced a few people who are in the throes of a good freak out.
Yes, that's happened. Yes.
Yeah, and you can it helps if you sort of understand what they're going through, and you have to give them maybe a bit of tough love because a lot of the time they just want to sit down and stop, and you're like no, just keep moving.
That's and your point about sort of making irrational decisions, they sort of start suggesting really random odd things which are just not really helpful to getting towards the finish line. So you have to kind of sort of keep them in check and sort of corral them in the right direction.
Yeah, it's a bit of a balance between like giving them a hug and then giving them a bit of a kick.
Yeah,
and
yes.
It's like a carrot and stick, and you use them in varying proportions depending on how well you know them as well.
Yeah,
I'm gonna read one of the ones that's in the article you wrote, Susie, because I think it's brilliant. It's a guy who did the Thames Ring 250, which isn't a race I was familiar with.
It's a very underground one, that one. Yeah, yeah.
You've
got to be in the know to do that one.
So he says, and this is a guy called John Hunt, I believe. Yeah, John Hunt. Says, I was going into second night, so I was pretty wasted by then and was on a country road with trees either side. I was about 150 miles in. I remember thinking the trees looked really strange with weird bits hanging down. So I stopped and had a closer look. To my amazement, it looked like someone had strung up thousands of rotisserie chickens as far as the eye could see. I was so confused by it, I took a closer look and went to grab one as I was a bit hungry by then. Alas, it was just a leaf.
Oh, no.
There were so many.
I put a sort of call out on social media for people who had sort of hallucinated, and there were just so many. But one which was actually also, I mean, actually not funny, was somebody who hallucinated that it was his job to take all the race signs in. So he was running along, taking them all down as he was going, which was not bad.
I hope he was not at the front.
I mean, any point in the race, anywhere he was, unless he was at the back. Bad news.
Have you had any hallucinations where you think they're hallucinations, but they aren't? And I've had a couple of those, which where that really freaks you out. Because you get to the point where you're hallucinating and you're comfortable with it, you know, reasonably, with you hallucinating. I did this 265K race in Gran Canaria, they call it 360 because it's a run around the island. And I'd been hallucinating quite a lot, and a couple of times I had to stop and sit down and work out which way was north and south, because I didn't have any route marks, and I just seemed like I was going up and down the same road, because I was, because I couldn't work out which was the right way. Right. It was really confusing. But and then I was running down the street, and I literally went, oh, and I jumped out of the way, and there was, I thought I saw an 8-foot-tall Indian totem,
right,
like on the side of the road. And I jumped and carried on, and then I went back, and I was like, that's super weird. And it was actually a wooden carved totem for some random restaurant, but it was the middle of the night, and it was like a native Indian restaurant in Gran Canaria. And yeah, so there are a few of those things where you think you're hallucinating, but actually it's real.
Yeah. It's like if you head out early in the morning, I'm not talking about like in a race, but if you're out before most people are up and you assume that you're on your own and you carry on, and then you bypass, and it's
people do behave slightly differently in first thing in the morning. Mm. There's an oddness to people's like behaviour.
Why are they up?
I've got
they
a purpose.
Home,
I'm running.
Or are they going somewhere?
Yeah, exactly. And you sort of stumble across like a sort of random man staring at a tree, and you're like, "Whoa, there's a dude staring at a tree. Am I seeing that? That is happening.
That's
right,
happening.
Yeah, that's happening right now. Yeah." So 100 miles in, and you saw that, you definitely think that was a
definitely. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's mad, isn't it? This is sort of the language that people use to describe hallucinations on Class A drugs, isn't it? And actually, lots of things you see, are kind of similar kind of things, aren't they? Sort of goblins, trees turning into like Ents, faces. You often say run into drug, but actually, there's maybe more to it than that. This feels like kind of like a very psychedelic sort of subculture of running.
I think you're very overstimulated and tired. I think it's probably with that sort of combination.
Yeah, that's remarkable. Yeah. Susie, what have you got planned next, running-wise or hallucination-wise?
So, hopefully no hallucinations. I've got an ultra this Saturday, actually.
Oh,
this
wow.
Saturday, yes. In Flagstaff, running towards the Grand Canyon.
Oh,
so,
nice.
I am quite excited about that. I'm only doing the short one because my friend's running the 100-miler, so I'm going to run the first half, get in the car, and then crew her. So
right.
I might hallucinate. Who knows?
Who knows?
She's picked a really terrible crewing buddy. That's what I'm going to say. I'm going to be knackered.
Like a tired crew buddy.
Yes, I'm going to be very tired.
I love it when people talk about doing the short one and then they actually talk about doing 50 miles.
Actually, no, it's 55K, actually. It's 55K okay. Just to...
Yeah. I might start defining stuff by kind of pre or post hallucination distance. Oh, that's just... Oh, that's like a sub hallucination distance.
not too impressed.
No. Yeah. Yeah. How about you, James? What's coming up?
Possibly a trip out to Amman for UTMB. Amman by UTMB, which is the UTMB is the big French race. If the people don't know about it, it's 170 kilometres, but there's a load of other races that go, and they've sort of sold that brand to other places around the world, and there's one now in China and South America and the Pyrenees next year. And so there's a second edition of the Oman race this year, so hopefully that. And then next year, I'm calling it the hardest race that no one's ever heard of, which is the last annual Vol State road race.
Okay, I can vouch that it's ridiculous. It's so underground and it's incredibly tough. And they have something called the Bench of Despair.
Oh wow!
Yeah, which is if you get there, then you're doing well.
This is definitely postgraduate hallucinations.
It's,
this one, I can see it.
It's a very niche, very specialist, very difficult race.
Is it loops or what?
It's unmarked, unsupported, 314. It's 10 pi distance.
Wow. Great.
Weirdly,
and you have to sort of make. There's no support. You have to kind of like rely on going into shops and sleeping on the sort of in the gutter.
But this is brilliant.
This is the brainchild of Laz, right?
Yeah. Lazarus Lake. Yeah, right. Gary Cantrell, in one of his guises, and it's been going for quite a long time, but no one seems to. Not many people have heard.
It's so underground. It's I think in America it's a little bit more well known, but. You there can't be many UK people that have done that, James.
No, they can't. That wasn't really the attraction. I think as a journeyman experience, I think it'll be amazing because you're gonna and Tennessee is meant to be like the friendliest state in the US, but they have these things called road angels, who are people who set up camps and things outside their houses, and it's motorbike repair shops and fire stations and things. And they put in cots and people literally. So I think from a sort of experiential thing, it'll be insane. I don't think it's about about winning it, or there's no medal, there's no I think you get a really random looking jacket at the end, a typical sort of Barclay marathon style. I think it's not really
you've got to bring something that repels wild dogs. That's all I'm going to say.
I heard that. That's one of the challenges, I think, is wild dogs. And armadillos are apparently a bit of a problem. A lot of them get run over. It's going to be weird.
If you needed stimulus, this sounds like the place to go for any sort of like extra powerful hallucinations.
Get me back in August.
We'll have to get you back on. Definitely.
We'll try and talk about that.
Great. James, Susie, thanks so much for coming back on the Runner's World podcast and talking about running hallucinations.
Always a pleasure.
What a trip.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Ben, you've got some exciting science to share with us, RE. Running hallucinations, haven't you?
Well, yeah, I thought off the back of James and Susie telling us all about theirs, it would be good to maybe a little explainer from the world of science. This comes courtesy of Dr. Chris Howe, who offers this explanation as to why hallucinations happen. And he says, I think that hallucinations during ultras can be put down to the extreme fatigue caused by the event itself, coupled with the sleep deprivation of running through one or even two nights. Research from the UTMB found that strenuous exercise had a marked effect on cognitive performance, ranging from lengthening of response time to more serious symptoms such as hallucinations.
Well, there you go. Many thanks to Dr. Chris Howe there. So if any of our listeners have experienced running hallucinations, send us an email and we'll read out some of the best next week at podcast@runnersworld.co.uk. Welcoming back Kerry McCarthy. It's been a while, Kerry.
Afternoon, gents. Yeah, it's been maybe 3 weeks, something like that.
Yeah. Have you been in the Southern Hemisphere?
I have. How did you know?
We work together, right? You
yeah,
all about it.
We sit opposite each other. I have. I've been in Patagonia, which is the region that is split between Chile and Argentina on the southern bit of South America. I've been running a half marathon there and doing all sorts of other things like glacier watching, insert your own gag here, puma spotting, things like that. It was an astonishing experience. There will, bet, of course, yeah, be a write-up about it in a future issue of Runner's World. But yeah, it's just the number of places that you can go to these days to do events. It's, you know, it's not just about the majors, as wonderful as they are. It's not just about your local races. It's just there's pretty much nowhere on the planet where you can't do a race now.
Apart from the wonderful worlds of international travel, what else has been happening?
Well, I've got two bits for you this week. The first is another week, another example of Kenyan excellence in distance running. Kenya's Jeffrey Kamworor smashed the men's half marathon world record. 17 seconds he broke it by, which may not sound like much, but I mean, this is normally a record where, you know, you take off a few seconds at a time if you're lucky. He did it at the Copenhagen Marathon at the weekend, and his time was 58 minutes and 1 second, so agonizingly close to 57 something. He has got pedigree. He won the 27 New York Marathon and came third last year at the same event. If you want to put that in context, if 58 minutes and 1 second just, you know, doesn't quite sound impressive enough to you, it's an average pace of 4:25 a mile. And think about, if for those of you who go down the track, your 1 mile rep best, you've warmed up for 20 minutes, you've done all your lunges and stretches and Ministry of Silly Walks and all that, and you're going for it, you probably still won't get anywhere near 4:25. For those of you who do parkrun every Saturday, that's an average pace of per 5K of 13:40 something.
His first 5K I read was 13:15, I think.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's the first of four 5Ks was 13 minutes 15 seconds.
It's just absolutely astounding, isn't it?
So the thing is, when he crossed the line, his time was 57, like,
yeah,
57, 53 or 54, right, and then it was adjusted. So I feel sorry for the guy, because he did, you know, he thought,
yeah,
maybe he'd done
he
a sub 58,
it.
And then no, but 58 yeah, one is amazing.
I mean, you know, one final bit of context. Our own beloved Mo Farah, who has won the Great North Run, world's biggest half marathon, yeah, a record 6 times in a row. His PB is over a minute slower, 59:07. Yep. So it's really quite some achievement.
It's amazing, yeah. Did you see Ross Tucker, who's a very good kind of contrarian online? He said, this is an amazing breakthrough, but we should perhaps not frame it as a sort of physiological breakthrough. It's a breakthrough in shoe technology, because of course he's wearing the Nike Next Percent. And he thinks, actually, you know, if you took 4% off the previous record, you'd be looking at a time in the regions of that. So actually, this is like a shoe success as much as a human one.
Well, yeah. You know, I see his point, and you know, I've worn those shoes, and they definitely help. You can't always say that about shoes when bands come out with all their highfalutin claims, but these shoes definitely demonstrate molecular difference. However, he had to stay fit. He had to do the training. He had to turn up and perform on the day and overcome all the conditions. You know, I see his point, but I'd prefer to just kind of, I think, allow him to revel in the glory.
Yeah, agreed.
And what a little extra bit is that Big Jeff, as I'm going to call him, Big Jeff is one of Kipchoge's pacers for the Ineos 150, 159 challenge. Yeah. So that if that guy's on form like that, I mean,
Kipchoge might have to say, just can you slow it down a little bit on that first 5K, please?
Yeah.
And the other thing I've got is just, it's a smallish thing, but it caught my eye. For those of you who want to watch the World Championships, which start later this month in Doha on the 27th of September, the IAAF have mixed things up a bit. They've come up with some new technology, chief amongst which will be there will be actually cameras in the blocks for the sprinters. So instead of, you know, the traditional shot you get kind of from the finish line with heads down and all that, the cameras in the box, you'll be able to look backwards at them as the sprinters are kind of, you know, doing that kind of 1,000-yard stare and jiggling up and down on the spot. And then when they're in the blocks and they've got their head down, you'll see their kind of, apparently, their face upside down looking at you. And then when they explode out the blocks, obviously, that will be a pretty cool angle. They have apparently lots of other angles elsewhere that we've not seen before. There will be body cameras placed on the officials in the call room. There will be drones, there will be wire cameras on the back straight, and in the tunnel there's a warm-up track normally, for those of you who don't know, where before the athletes get announced and come out, they're running up and down, there will be a camera in there on a rail running alongside them so that you can see them doing their warm-up. Super slow-mo in the discus cage, and some kind of LED stuff in the pit where the jumping events are taking place. So I don't know about you, I quite enjoy watching the field stuff, but obviously not as much as the track. So for those in particular, anything that can make it a bit more compelling is wonderful.
This happened, there's a company called Velon, and they did it with cycling, and now pro teams have GoPros mounted all over their bikes, and it's like a whole extra in-race angle that they want to give, so that there's this sort of in-peloton video access that everyone gets. And I guess it's the same thing. You just want people to view things, they want people to watch and be engaged. So, you know, give it a few more years. When cameras are tiny, they'll all have their race numbers or whatever will have a built-in camera, and everyone can watch POV 100 meter sprints. Like, this will be the way it goes.
I think it's great. I mean, remember when Super Slow Mo came in for tennis? Do you remember that? And you could see the kind of topspin that Rafa was putting on his forehand. But it really added something. So hopefully it'll have the same sort of effect.
I hope so. I mean, track and field, let's face it, we all know it needs something. Yeah, and the IAAF are working hard, playing around with different concepts, I think, to appeal to a younger generation. Yeah. Technology is definitely one of the ways to go.
Yeah, that's great. Cody, thanks so much for coming on and telling us about the news. So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. I'd like to say a huge thanks to our guests, Susie Chan, James Poole and Kerry McCarthy, and to Number 8 Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more news, reviews, interviews and much, much more from the wider world of running, please head over to runnersworld.com/UK. Please like and subscribe on iTunes. Please leave a comment. We like those. And thanks to Acast, our hosting partner. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.